So just to recap where we are, we spend most of the year, a team of people, I don't know, probably 100 people total, traveling the world and teaching general seminars. What do you call it? Non-Buddhist. We don't mention Buddhism, and we teach people how to use basically the laws of karma to succeed in their life, have a happy life. Then thousands of people come to that. Then 4 times a year, people ask me if I could teach in Phoenix like once a month, and maybe 4 times a year do an extended teaching the old way. So the way I was trained, which is that you go through a traditional classic scripture. So I chose one, which I think is the most important book I've ever studied, and which my teacher taught for 30 years. And that's like enlightenment from A to Z. So it's an ancient book called, ancient style called Lamrim. And it's about 1,000-page text. I think it will take us, I was saying, what, 12 years? I think I'm sort of upgrading that to 15 years or maybe, I don't know. We're studying 2 books. The other book, we just finished the first chapter a couple nights ago, and that was the 10th year that I was teaching it. So that's going to be a while, that one. But this one, I think it would take about, I don't know, 12 to 15 years. And we're about 3 years into it. And we've reached a part where we are studying how to prepare for meditation. So in this text, meditation is compared to running a race. A meditation session of maybe 20 minutes is compared to running a race. Like in the Olympics, how you spend years preparing for a race, and then you spend a couple hours warming up. And then the race itself takes, I don't know, 20 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 minutes. And so meditation is the same according to the classics of Buddhism, according to the ancient tradition. You can't just sit down, plop down on a cushion and start meditating. You have to prepare your mind for meditation. And there are 6 ways to prepare your mind, 6 steps you have to take your mind through. And we're on the, which one? 4th one. Which is a tiny exercise. It might take you 2 or 3 minutes if you got to get to work in the morning. You could do it in 2 or 3 minutes. You could do it in 5 minutes. And you do an intense exercise to attempt to collect a large amount of good karma and to try to clean out a large amount of negative karma within a few minutes, just before you meditate. And then the meditation is supposed to go much better. So there's a practice called Tsoksak Dipchang. Say Tsoksak Dipchang. Tsoksak means you try to collect powerful, quick, you know, boost of karmic energy just before you start meditating. And then Dipchang, you try to wipe out some negative seeds just before you start meditating. And then that has a profound effect on the meditation, in the way that warming up before an Olympic race might make the difference if you warm up properly. And if you don't warm up properly, probably that you won't win the race and you won't do too well. So anyway, we're in the middle of that exercise. And the most powerful way to collect good karma in a short amount of time is simply to think about your own heart teacher. So we've been talking about heart teachers, and we said that it could be anybody in your life. It could be your mom, it could be your sister, it could be your girlfriend, it could be a high school teacher, it could be anybody. The definition of a heart teacher is whoever in your life opened your heart the most. That's your heart teacher. And then, so it's supposed to be the case that if you just bring them to mind and sit with them for a few minutes, then when you start to meditate, it'll be much more powerful. Because just to be in their presence is probably the highest good karma you can make, okay? And I'm not talking about me. I think everyone has their own heart teacher, and you will find your own heart teacher. If you didn't find them yet, keep looking, okay? It's important to find them in your lifetime, okay? So then we were discussing how your heart teacher in this tradition is really four different people mixed as one, right?
No,
good, okay, good. We just spent all last night discussing why it wasn't that, okay? The name of the heart teacher in this case is, I don't know, Lama Losang Tubong Dorje Chang. Lama Losang Tubong Dorje Chang. The names of four different important enlightened beings in our tradition. Lama is your own personal teacher. So even if they're not Buddhist, and even if they're not, overtly spiritual person in robes or something or in a church, it's someone who has changed your life and guided you in your life. That's Lama. Losang means in the founder of whatever tradition you are into. If you're a Christian, it could be Jesus. If you're a Muslim, it could be Muhammad. You know, if you're Jewish, it's Moses. It doesn't matter. Whoever's the founder of your tradition, Lama Losang. In our case, it's the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, which is Jetsun Kapa, Lama Losang. Tubong means the Buddha, an enlightened being, someone who has imparted teachings in this world formally as a teacher. And then Dorje Chang is the form that the Buddha takes when the Buddha teaches the secret or higher teachings of Buddhism. Then that's completely different from the form they take when they teach the open teachings. When the Buddha teaches the open teachings, the Buddha appears as a shaved head. They called it, what they called? Urek Shap Jen. Urek means baldy, and meaning shaved head. And then Shap Jen means barefoot. Their bare feet are sticking out of their robes in the pictures. So traditionally, the Buddha takes that image when he comes to a planet to teach. That's called Chokituku, which means the Koch classic form of a Buddha for teaching. But then there's another form that the Buddha takes, which is more of a like an angel, or an enlightened angel. In this world, it was long hair, jewels, silken robes, very graceful, like a dancer, very sensual, and that was called Vajradhara. So when the Buddha taught the higher teachings, the secret teachings in Buddhism, he took that form. In the scriptures, which are our canon, our Bible, it consists of the Kangyur and the Tengyur. The speech of the Buddha himself is about 100,000 pages in our tradition. You could compare it, the only records we have of Jesus which are considered, have been considered historically to be the three synoptic gospels plus John, are 30 pages of his own speech. So we're fortunate in Buddhism. Lord Buddha lived to 81. He got enlightened around 30, some, you know, and he taught constantly for 50 years. So we have 100,000 pages of the Buddha's teachings. Half of them are secret, and half of them he taught in a different form. So when you are visualizing your own teacher, you can incorporate in that visualization, you can imagine that you're... We were talking the other night that you can imagine that there was one enlightened being who chose to take many forms to teach. And so when you visualize your teacher in our tradition, when you close your eyes before meditation and just bring your teacher to mind, you are supposed to reflect that they are, if you are a Christian, it would be, my teacher is Jesus, and my teacher is God, and my teacher is the Holy Ghost, and my teacher is a human being who appears on this planet. Like you would think that one being has appeared in three or four different ways on this planet for your benefit, right? For my benefit. So in our tradition, you consider your heart teacher to be the Buddha in disguise. Okay, that's our tradition. So you're supposed to reflect on that. And then we went into some long scriptures that talked about how enlightened beings are like actors. Like, I had a problem the other day. It was, who was that? No, it was, I was on the airplane. I watch a lot of movies over people's shoulders because I'm too busy to watch them myself. But I end up watching most of them anyway. But I never get to know what's going on because I don't have the earphones on. But there was, I think it was, well, there's a case like the guy in Harry Potter, his friend, sort of chubby guy.
Ron,
yeah. Then he played in 50 First Dates. Did you see that? And he played a fool, a surfer, like a beach bum fool. And it didn't work because you thought of him as Harry Potter's friend and now he's supposed to be a beach bum. And it just didn't work out. But in acting, you have one person who might play many roles and many roles that are not at all similar, right? And then we were saying that in our tradition, when you meet your heart teacher, you're supposed to think that they are the Buddha or they are a guardian angel who has taken the form of your girlfriend or your sister or your mother or your dog or your high school teacher, and they are teaching you. They have come to the world because you need, at this moment in your life, a girlfriend who is more stable than you and steady and can help you, you know, decide on your career path or something like that, okay? So, and then you begin to suspect all the people in your life. You see, once you've established that one of them is a guardian angel, your heart teacher, then other people you've met, like your parents or your kids, they begin to be suspicious. Like, if Buddha can appear as my girlfriend, then why not as my best friend? And why not as my boss at work? And how many Buddhas are there really running around in my life? And in the higher teaching of Buddhism, you're supposed to think there's a lot of them. There's a lot of enlightened beings in disguise trying to guide you through life secretly. What do you call it? Anonymously, okay? Even those who irritate you, they teach you something, right? Or the people who hurt you the most in your life could very well be an enlightened being who's trying to take you further. So in our tradition, it's very difficult to completely hate anybody because you never know. You're always suspicious. You're never quite sure that they're not a Buddha, okay? Before we go on, I wanted to say one more word about that, mainly because it's on your homework. You can also think in the reverse, like we are also trained in the monastery to think in the reverse, which would mean if you were enlightened and you wanted to help other people, then wouldn't it be useful to morph into different roles during your life to help them? So if it's the case that one enlightened being has been morphing into my mom when I was young, my sister when I was older, my wife when I got to maturity, and my kids when I grew up, if one enlightened being has been playing many roles in my own life, then if I wanted to help other people, then I would emulate that enlightened being, right? Which in our tradition means morphing, okay? Morphing to fit the audience, okay? And the Buddha was famous at it. The Buddha was very good at it, right? So just in teaching the two groups of teachings, the open teachings and the secret teachings, for the open teachings, he was very traditional. He wore very robes very nicely and he shaved his head just right. And he sat up in a certain way, and he looked like the Buddha. But then when it got to the secret teachings, he had to morph into sort of a, I don't know, a very sensual, like a dancer, you know, and like a being of great beauty, an angel. at the same time. So if the Buddha can do that kind of thing, morph to fit their audience and to fit the teachings they're giving, then I think it's important for us to think about it. You know, I have friends, one close friend I did a three-year retreat with once, and she used to teach some before we did retreat, and she had very long hair, and she was, I don't know, I thought her appearance was kind of striking, and people were attracted to that. And then later, excuse me, she became a Buddhist nun, and she shaved all her hair off, and she was always wearing these robes. And frankly, I thought she wasn't as effective after that, because people were a little, you know, there's connotations to a woman cutting her hair off. And then some people felt like they couldn't approach her because she was a nun, and they couldn't talk to her about their problems with their husband, or, you know, they thought, oh, it's inappropriate for me to talk about my sex life with a nun or something like that. So then I felt like, I feel like it's useful to be able to morph in to fit your audience. So we have DCI, okay? We have the Diamond Cutter Institute. It's a business management training. And we just got back from Russia and China, and we all wear ties and suits, and we try to look like business people. And if you don't wear a tie and a suit, and you try to teach the corporate heads of Earl Sib Banking Corporation, which has 32,000 workers, they just won't listen to you, okay? They just will ignore you. If you look amateur, they won't listen to you. These people, the people we taught in St. Petersburg, each one of them runs 5 or 10 or 20 banks, okay? Each one of them in one district in the largest landmass in the world. So you have to look professional, right? So that's one kind of morphing. And then when you teach a yoga audience, you have to put on yoga pants and, you know, you have to use a slightly different language. When you're teaching business people, you're talking our return on investment, and you're talking about profit margins and P&L, you know, and you use their language. And then when you get with yogis, you start quoting the Yoga Sutra and, you know, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha, and you try to impress them with the Yoga Sutra, and you memorize the Yoga Sutra so that you can relate to yoga people. And then when you go to talk to a Buddhist audience, you better know some Tibetan or Sanskrit, and you could wear a red suit or, you know, like that. You would look different for them. And I personally believe it's an important skill, and I believe Lord Buddha is the precedent for it. I don't think it's useful to just go around in one of those forms as just a yogi, or as just a business person, or as just a Urek, Gorek, shaved-headed monk. I think you should leave your options open. If you want to help people, you should be able to talk different languages. In Europe, if you go teach in Europe, you have to know football. Okay, yeah. Which is not football, right? It's soccer. And you better be able to say something intelligent about the teams in England and how they did against Spain last week and why the manager is a schmuck and the owner is a cheapskate. And, you know, and then, you know, when you get back to America, you better know some, you know, something about modern music and be able to talk about or play some music that they enjoy. And then when you go to Latin America, you better know your Cervantes. Un hidalgo ingenueso, an ingenious gentleman named Don Quixote, right? So, which is the real name of the book. So you better be able to, like, at least relate to people in their own language a little bit. Scott's really good at it. He gets to a country, within 2 days he knows like 50 important words in that language. And I'm just saying that if you want to help people, you have to be able to morph. And the precedent is here in what we're studying, okay? You should be able to adjust to different situations, different kinds of people. Don't be attached to yourself as being any one of the above. Don't say, I'm really a hippie who's trying to look like a monk, or I'm really a surfer who's trying to, you know, like, don't think like that. Don't think you're really anything. Just think I am whatever it takes to help people at that time, okay? And don't say, I'm this presenting myself as that, you know? Just be everything to whoever needs it. Gain that skill, because that's what the Buddha is doing to us all the time, according to the text we just read. So if you want to be like the Buddha, you should be fluid. And also fluid in your location, right? If it helps people, if I can help more people in China, then I just go, you know, I just go. We had a couple came the other day to Sedona, Chinese couple, and they said, we would like to invite you to China, but we know you don't go to small cities. And I said, what's a small city? They said, well, we only have 5 million people in our city. You know, and I said, how many cities of all of Phoenix, all of metropolitan Phoenix is 4 million, right? Which is the fifth largest city in the United States. I said, how many cities are there in China of 5 million or more? 270. Okay? Then yeah, you should go. You should go. I mean, your location should also be fluid if your job is to help people. You shouldn't be attached to any particular country or race of people or language. You should be global. You should be able to morph to whatever country it's helpful to morph to. And when you're in China, respect their laws, respect their customs, respect their opinions. And when you're in Russia, do the same. And when you're in Mexico, do the same. And like that. You shouldn't think of... I think if you really become a serious teacher, you should be able to... You don't have a standard identity. You're just... They make fun of me because when I go to France, I say my ancestors are from France. De La Roche. And Normandy. And then when I go to Ireland, I say, actually, my ancestors are from Ireland. The Roaches in Cork. And then when I go to Germany, I say, no, my grandmother was Liebermann, and we're from Germany, you know. And when I go to, anyway, like that. When I go to Israel, I'm saying I'm Jewish because my grandmother's Liebermann. And it goes down the female side, right? So, which we don't know for sure. But anyway, the point is, relate to everybody. When I go to China, I say all my teachers are from West China. You see what I mean? And they really appreciate it, you see? And like that. If you're going to help people, you should relate to them, right? Okay? And don't think of yourself. I'm American, you know? Somebody asked me, where are you from? We were in the Middle East, you know, and when they ask you where you're from, you say, you never say America. You say, I'm from Manhattan. It's an island off the coast of America. you know, and then like that, you know, you fit to where you are, okay? Because you aren't anywhere. If you're really trying to help people and you have to stay in China the rest of your life, then you stay in China the rest of your life. And it doesn't matter where you are. It's just where can you help more people? And in what form can you help more people? So don't be attached to who you think you are. Be able to be everybody, okay? And practice it. It's a skill. And it's a kindness to people to relate to them, right? To fit to them, right? Okay. Anyway, that's a reversing what we're learning here. Because the Buddha did it. According to this text, the Buddha has been impersonating all the principal people in your life. Your whole life. If the Buddha can impersonate a dog or your sister or your mom or your brother, then you can. Okay? You can do the same. Got it? Okay. Where are we, Nyingbo? Dinding Nyepa? Is that it? I think it is. The end of 97A, maybe? Okay, right around there. By the way, we're going through the Tibetan word by word. We're putting it on video because I think it's important for future generations, even though it's a little bit tedious for you. Okay. If you come to grasp that all these people in your life have been a guardian angel in different forms, okay? Then you can sort of imagine that the person whom you visualize just before you do your meditation is like a combination of those people. And that's why we, Tsen Chakpa at the end of that sentence means, that's why the name has come to be. Tsen means name here. Chakpa here doesn't mean desire. It's a separate verb that means became. So Tsen Chakpa means, that's why the name became Lama, Losang, Tubong, Dorje Chang. Four of the important people in your life. It's like saying Edith, Philip, Jeff, and George was our dog, okay? It was our basset hound. Edith, Jeff, George, and you know, like you, when you visualize the people who have meant the most to you in your life and guided you the most in your life, you glue all their names together and call them that. Okay? Got it? Tsen Chakpa. That's the name. Then we give it that name, okay? That multiple name. Tsen Chakpa Yen. Derma Se Sangye Kungi Ngo Nyi. This is a quotation from a scripture that says, they are. So now he's going to make another point, okay? It's a famous line that says, they are the essence of every enlightened being there is. So we don't believe there's just one Buddha in the universe. We believe there are millions of Buddhas in the universe. One came to this planet, but we believe there are countless Buddhas. Countless people on countless planets have already evolved, and countless planets have evolved to where everybody on the planet was already a Buddha. And then they're running around the universe doing good stuff, okay? Brahman Devi Charatante. What's that from? Kaladanda. Yeah, Kaladanda. What? Hatha Yoga Pradipika, right? Okay. Which, that says they're still running around the world in disguise, okay? Ngoni Che Lama Ni Sangye Kunki Yeshiki Rang Suk Chik Tu Dupe Ngo Yimbar. Your own heart teacher, whoever that is actually the embodiment of the wisdom of every single enlightened being in the universe. Okay? So it's true that a single enlightened being has been impersonating all the people who have influenced you most in your life. But the opposite is also true. That one Buddha is the embodiment of every Buddha. Okay? Got it? Different. It's a different point now. You must come to see that this is true. At some point in your spiritual life, you have to come to see that. Two things, right? Now we have two different things. One, all the people who have influenced you most in your life were one guardian angel in different forms. Number two, that guardian angel incorporated every enlightened being in the universe. Okay? Okay? Nye gupe, you must grasp both points. You must understand that both points are true. Shibar means in detail, oktu. Oktu means below, meaning further on in the text. So in a text, ok, below means further on. Gang means I told you back there. Above means back there in the text. Ok means later on in the text. Below, okay? What's ok lung? What's lung? Huh? Lung, not lung. Wind. So what's an ok lung? It is a fart. Now I'm just trying to give you a word that you'll remember. I don't know why, but people remember bad words and they don't remember philosophy words. So lower wind, ok lung. Okay? Now you'll remember the word ok, right? Okay. If I tried to teach you ok min, you wouldn't remember, right, Phil? What's ok min? Below none, meaning the highest paradise of Buddha. If I tried to teach you ok min, you wouldn't remember. But ok lung you will remember now forever. Ok tu, shenyan tensul ki kap. When we talk about how to relate to your teacher, okay, which is the first great step of all spiritual journeys. And how to find them and how to relate to them is the first subject of all spiritual evolution. Okay? Kapsu, chepargyur, ngyur, ngyur, future tense. Okay? We will explain. Shepa, present tense. Chepa, future tense. Okay? We will explain it later. Okay? We'll talk more about it later. Shibar, in detail. Okay? In detail. Dila kawa lepa ma chakna. If you don't grasp these 2 points well, what 2 points? All the people who have influenced in your life were probably one guardian angel in different forms. Two, that guardian angel is actually every enlightened being. They are one with every other enlightened being in every other world. Okay? Machakta, if you don't get this point, and get means internalize, right? So that you are acting on it, right? You become suspicious of everyone who shows up in your life. Okay? It's a pleasant suspicion. It's a reverse of... it's a benevolent paranoia. Okay? Lame Nelnjor Sub Sub Jinda Gomkyang. You can go and get any guru yoga text, okay? There are many guru yoga practices where you pray to your guru and you pray to your lama and you can bow down to them and you can, you know, fuss over your teacher. But Sugnyen Tsam, Sugnyen Tsam. Sugnyen means a reflection in a mirror, okay? And in Tibetan it means it's only a shadow of the real thing. It's only a, what do you call that? Shadow of the real thing? You know, if you don't feel like your teacher is a guardian angel, and your mom and your brothers and sisters and your nephews and all that are a divine being playing with you, and if you don't believe that that divine being is all the other divine beings glued together, then somebody can give you some ancient wood-carved text and say, recite this, it's a lama practice, you know. It'll just be a shadow of the real thing. Sugnyen here means, tsam means just a shadow of the real thing. Te, larmim chemole, so now he's quoting, right, in Buddhism you can prove things in two ways, which is quote an authentic scripture, authoritative scripture, or prove it by logic, right? He's choosing to quote a scripture, which is the Larmim Chemo, which is probably the most famous book ever written in Tibet, okay? Written by the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, Jetsun Khapa. Larmim Chemo le, de tar na lame nyanja she yonsa trape dhamba ang. Yeah, there is this famous practice called, say, lame nyanjor. Lame Nelnjor. Lama means lama. Okay? Nelnjor means yoga. It's the Tibetan word for yoga. Why is the Tibetan word for yoga? We could talk about for half an hour. We'll do it some other day. Okay? Nelnjor. Okay? Anyway, one of the most famous spiritual practices in all of 2,500 years of history in India, and over 1,000 years of spiritual history in Tibet, one of the most famous practices is devotion to your teacher. You know, like doing prayers to your teacher, honoring your teacher, like that. Trying to follow your teacher's advice, even when you don't like it. Okay, like that. Lame Nelnjor, Yonsa Drape. Okay, Yonsa Drape Dhamba means, okay, that's a big famous, everybody knows this is famous. Lama devotion practices. But you must understand them as I have presented them to you just now. Meaning, Jetsun Khapa also made those 2 points about your teacher. One, that they are probably a divine being in disguise, and two, that they're every divine being. Question for you, do they have to be aware that they are a divine being? No. Okay? That's an interesting point. If you grill, If you put bamboo under their fingertips and torture them and tie them down and say, okay, admit it, are you a divine being? They'll say, no, I'm not, really, I'm not. And they'll be speaking the truth. It's possible that they don't see themselves as a divine being. But that doesn't mean that they can't be a divine being for you, okay? That's the emptiness of a teacher, right? The magic of empty teachers. Mikpa tunretsam la jangpe ni kayang ma chin, mi chin. If you just kind of bring up your lama to mind once in a while, like once a day you're doing your meditation and you say, okay, I'll close my eyes, I'll think about my teacher. Okay, what's for breakfast? Karyang mi chin means you won't get anywhere. You won't get anywhere. So you can have some big famous, you know, lama chipa practice and you can recite it. But if all you're doing is bringing them to mind once in a while, you won't get anywhere. They have to be. There's a story in Hinduism, right? They cut open the body of Hanuman, and every bone had the word of the name of his teacher carved on it, all over, like circling the bone, you know. And it has to be like that, you know. Your relationship to your teacher, and I'm your scripture teacher. I'm talking about your heart teacher. Your relationship to your heart teacher should be like that, okay? That should be constantly thinking about them. I personally find that the meditation we did this morning, the third one, which is a kind of Mahamudra, because you are watching your own mind, you're watching the thoughts float through your own mind. If you get good at it, it's a little disturbing. Because you suddenly realize you think about your lama like once a day for 2 seconds. And the thoughts that are expended on donuts far exceed the number of thoughts expended on your teacher. I'm speaking honestly, frankly, totally honest. Okay, like if you learn to listen to your own mind, it can be a little bit of a shock to see how little of your day is spent on anything important. In your own mind, okay? So learn to listen to your own thoughts, okay? All right. Yosatabe. Dila. That's Jetsu Kapa's take on it, okay? In his most famous book. We'll go for a bit more, okay? Is that right? We got a late start. Kadin Sunni. Okay, so the original Jorcha text, the text on how to prepare yourself for a meditation, talks about Kadin Sumden Tsawe Lama, which means my root Lama who has the three kinds of kindness, who possesses the three kinds of kindness, okay? Then Pabok Rinpoche wants you to know what the three kindnesses are, okay? So a traditional teacher will pay you three kinds of kindness. They will show you three different kindnesses. They differ between the open teachings and the secret teachings. So if your teacher is teaching you the secret teachings, they show you three kinds of kindness, which are not the list is not the same as the three types of kindness that your teacher shows you in the open teachings. But obviously they're the same thing. They boil down to the same thing. Okay. Dolukla means here it's sutra, as opposed to tantra, okay? So sutra has many, many, many meanings. When you say donglak, you are, in that case, sutra means open teachings. The word sutra means open teachings, okay? So do luk means, say?
System,
yeah. Without the S?
Sheep.
Who said that? Yay!
Sheep.
All right then. And I'll tell you something cool. That Lug, L-U-G, is the Tibetan is an ancient translation in Tibetan for Ida, which is the left hand channel. Why?
Because
it's white. Okay, that's cool. Most yoga teachers, even in India today, have no idea what Ida means, but it means sheep. Okay, Lug. Anyway. That's irrelevant here. Okay, Dolukla. Okay. A lama grants you, S-T-Z-A-L. Okay, tsal. A lama grants you. It's a beautiful verb in Tibetan. This is not chak tsal or anything like that. Tsal, they grant you three things. Say lapa.
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 Good. One more time. Lapa.
Lapa.
The laziest audience we've ever encountered was in Moscow recently. But I think we've replaced them. Okay. Say lapa.
Lapa.
Lung.
Lung.
Chi.
Chi.
So lapa means private advices. Like your lama takes you aside. I got to talk to you. You know, the way you've been acting recently at so-and-so, it wasn't really appropriate, and I hope you will. You know, I'm asking you if you could try to improve on that, okay? Then it's something they tell you personally. They don't tell it to other people. That's lapa. Lung means, in Buddhism, there's a practice of taking an important book, like, say, the Bible, okay, and simply... the lama simply reads it out loud to the disciple. And then there's a blessing which has come down through, in our case, like 40 generations. Each lama read out loud this important text to their student. And there's a blessing that comes down through a human lips expressing themselves to a human ear, which cannot be replaced by Google. All right, there's a... something going on when a person, or when you sing a song to somebody, right? It's not the same as a recording, right? There's a human element going on. So lung means a transmission, a sacred transmission, which is what I'm trying to do with this text in those 12 years. You know, I could go to, you know, Sedona and record it and on a webcam, but it's not the same thing. Try to give a human transmission, human to human transmission, okay? And then finally, qi. Qi means formal teachings, okay? So qi happens in a classroom situation. A lapa happens in private, and usually it's unpleasant, and the teacher is like, tell you why you're naughty, or why you're not doing stuff right. And then a lung is sort of neutral, they're just sitting there and they want to make sure you hear every Tibetan word of an important text, which is what we are doing, a lung here and a chi. Okay? We are doing a lung and a chi. And then we do the lapas over in that little room over there. Okay? And only the best students get lapas, okay? I mean, they don't like it and they complain about it and it's unpleasant for them, but I may point out that it's only the close students who get the lapas, who get personally criticized by their lama because they believe they won't run away if they criticize them, right? Okay. So if you get criticized by a teacher, it's a compliment. And I'm sure we'll all take it this way. All right, so Ngakluglo means in the secret teachings, there's a different list of three kindnesses, okay? They are, say, Wangkor. Wangkur, Gyushe, Mengat Nang. Wangkur means what? Yeah, to kur here means to grant an empowerment. Okay, Wang means an empowerment. Okay. Some of you do that. You've done that. What do you call that? Taekjen Sojong, right? Jigme, you guys do that sometimes, right? One day vows. And then they say, Kur Porwa is the name for an arhat. It's one name for an arhat. Someone who's reached nirvana is called Kur Porwa. Kur Porwa means they have dumped the load. Not the usual meaning. That they're like a horse which has had a heavy load on them. And then at night, the guy takes the load off the mule or something. And then the load has been removed. It's Kur Porwa. So the word for Wang, the word for giving an empowerment in Tibetan is to load an initiation onto somebody. And it's a big responsibility. They are putting the word in Tibetan for granting initiation is loading the burden of an initiation on the student. Okay? Kur. Kur means that. Wang Kur. So initiation means there are special practices you can do, and you're not allowed to do them unless your personal teacher thinks you're ready. And the wang, or the empowerment, is the seal of approval by your teacher that they think you're ready for higher teachings. Okay. Okay. And that wang also passes down from human to human, and it's unbroken, and it has to be personal. It has to be given personally. Okay. Wang kor, gyu she means to explain to you the secret teachings. In a formal setting, you know, they'll sit you down and say, okay, well, now we're going to go through the Vajrayogini sadhana. I'll take you through each word of it, and you will understand what it means, okay? These practices, I will teach you word by word, okay? We did a 7-year tantric course in Diamond Mountain. I think it was 12,000 pages of translation, and they got it word for word, right? That was Gyushe. They got that explained word for word. It took, I don't know, it took something like 5 or 6,000 hours, okay? I don't know. Wangkur, it's the first time it's been done in the West, okay? Wangkur, Gyushe, Mengak Nang. Then Mengak means private advices. It's similar to Lapa that we had before. So Mengak means... They take you in a corner and they say, well, now you've got the secret teachings, and you personally need to concentrate on this, okay? Not the other people. You have a lot of jealousy. So it'd be useful for you to do this, right? My teacher, in my Mengok, said, you have a lot of jealousy. And I'm like, me? And he said, yeah, that's your main problem. So... there was another student that I was jealous of, and he got all the attention, and you know, he got to write books. I didn't get to write books. And so the teacher said, okay, so I want to break your jealousy. I require that you type this guy's, the manuscript for this guy's next book. You type it. And it was 3 times. It took me a year to type it, right? I typed it 3 times. This was before computers, so I had to type it 3 times. So I did, you know, he's breaking my jealousy, he's trying to break my jealousy. Then I finished it, you know, and it was ready to publish. Then he said, you raise the money, you go to work, and you raise the money to print his book, $20,000 in 1980, you know, which was about, I don't know, 6 months of 40, 60 hours a week, you know. And he said, you pay for it, you know. So that's Mengak, you know, like the teacher will identify your personal needs and then he'll break you. Okay, but it didn't work. Okay. I did it, but it didn't work. Okay. Maybe it worked a little bit. Desum Lama Chigle Topa. Desum Lama Chigle Topa means if one of your teachers grants you all three, then we call it Katin Sundem Lama. Kadin Sumden means the Lama who has paid me the 3 kinds of kindness. Okay, all 3 kinds of kindness. So it normally it's all 3 from one person. Then that's called Kadin Sumden Lama. And that's a special kind of Lama. That's the Lama who has granted me all 3 from one person. Okay, either in the secret tradition or the open tradition. Okay. I'll go 1 more minute, then I'll give you a break, okay? A pee-pee break and a rehydration break. If you're new to Arizona, drink a lot, okay? It keeps you awake during the class. Just kidding. Do you have an image of Jetsun Kapa, Jigme? I mean, you have. I think you had one, right? That's a pretty wimpy one. You gave me one. That's better. It's not great, but it's better.
What about
the statue? The statue's okay. We're trying to get the color, though. But let's leave it. Leave it for now. Okay, we'll leave it for now. So, by the way, we just reached class 3 of this series. We're supposed to get through 10. It's Wednesday, right? Thursday? It's Wednesday. Yeah, good luck. We'll continue in Guadalajara, okay? I hope to get through 5 classes by Sunday night. We'll see. We may not make it, but I don't care. Okay. Gui Namba, so in our tradition, in our immediate lineage, how can you picture the teacher? How can you picture your own teacher? How are you going to picture this person with 4 names, right? And this is just for people in our tradition. If you're from some other tradition, you can picture it differently. It's useful, if you're Christian, to picture your personal teacher as looking like Jesus, okay? And etc., whatever you're following, okay? Queen Namba, how are we supposed to picture this teacher, their body? Qi means their outer form, their outer appearance. You know Qi from Qinang, Tabla Tzor, Bet, right? Use inner and outer methods to move prana. Qi, Gyawa Tsongkhapa Chenpo. They could look like Jatsongkhapa, the teacher of His Holiness the First Dalai Lama. Gelong, as a monk, okay? Ngormik Dzimbe Namba. Say Ngormik Dzimbe Namba. One who holds the Ngormik in the form of someone who holds the Ngormik, okay? Then this is a very, very common word in visualizing holy beings, Ngormik. Ngormik, then he's going to explain it, and this is the only place you'll ever see it explained, because it's weird. Here we go. Ngormikni, you want to know what Ngormik means? He says, Chawa Ngorpe Kadok Tabu. There's a duck in Tibet, a mallard, that has golden feathers, okay? And that's why you had the duck up there, right? You were trying to... I didn't get it. That duck isn't the right color, all right? That duck's a little too brown. Ngormik is more of a, like gold paint, like if you get gold and you melt it. That's the wrong color, okay? My dad used to hunt ducks, and we had a few stuffed ducks around the house, and they have exquisite coloration around the neck, and they have a bit of true gold color. So in Tibet, gold is more, when you say gold color, it's more of a, I don't know, it's a metallic gold. It's like the color of pure gold, okay? So there are some ducks whose feathers have some color of pure gold. So Ngormik Dzimba means they are wearing the golden robes. So in ancient India, these robes are a corruption, or I don't know, but anyway, the maroon is unique to Tibet. This is considered gold. This exact color is considered gold. And in ancient India, a monk was required to wear this color only. There were 2 other acceptable colors. One is which is the blue here. That's a legal color. And the maroon is also legal. But the Ngormik is preferred. This is considered a golden color. Okay? And it was supposed to be one piece. Yeah, I mean, modern Tibetan monks wear an outer shawl of Ngormik. But in ancient India, you were required to wear a single piece that wrapped around your whole body like a sari. Okay? And that's a long story. And it had to be sewn in a certain way and things like that. Okay? We'll do one more and then we'll take a break. Did I say that before? Oopsie. Deyang Chakye Chuche. Chakye means... Can you go back to Jatsongkhapa? That one that's peeking out there with the Shabjen. Yeah. That's not great. Okay, anyway. Chakye means his right hand. Churcheki, mudra. We call mudra, right? Means a sacred gesture. Argam, padyam, pushpe, dupe, aloke, gande, Nude Shepta. There are gestures called mudras, right? So his right hand is in this mudra. And that in Buddhism, this gesture means I'm teaching you. This is the teaching gesture, okay? We call it Chöche in the text. Chöche means explaining the Dharma, okay? Then his left hand, Yun, is in what we call the gesture of meditation. So this gesture on the lap, this gesture on the lap means meditation. That when a lama is making that gesture in a painting, they are in meditation, okay? So this is a contradiction. Okay? It's not possible to be in deep meditation and delivering a teaching at the same time, is it? Yeah, well, only a Buddha is... This is a sign that the person in the painting is supposed to be enlightened. Because it's impossible to think discursive thoughts, like, what will I say next, at the same time as you're in deep meditation. You know, okay, so I mean, normally they are... It's impossible to have both states of mind running at the same time. And a Buddha can do both. A Buddha can be in ultimately deep meditation, and at the same time be choosing their words for the next sentence, okay? They can do both. In fact, they can be in meditation on emptiness directly and teaching verbally at the same time, which is impossible for any other being. No other state of mind can split itself into those two, okay? At the same time. So, and he holds a thungse. Thungse means a bowl, a monk's bowl, okay? And I told you, I went to Sri Lanka on a business trip to buy emeralds and rubies and topaz. So I spent like a couple of weeks there. And then one night I had to do tsechu, so I had to dress up as a monk. And then the guy, the businessman realized I was a monk. And then from then on it was really fun. So he said, well, you'll have to go eat with the other monks, you know. So I said, well, you know, I know there's a custom, but I don't really know how to do it, you know. And he said, don't worry, we'll take care of everything, you know. So they take me to some temple before noon, right? And they hand out bowls. It's this thing, like, it takes both arms to hold it, you know. And then you sit down and the sponsor comes and they, you know, you're supposed to beg for your food, right? So you like carry this bowl up to the family that's sponsoring lunch, and then they start throwing, they throw like a 12-course meal into the bowl. And the last thing is an ice cream cone, you know, like, fuck. And then I'm like, you know, like, how do I get to the food under the ice cream cone? And you know, and then you sit down and you gotta try to eat fast before the ice cream melts, and because you can't have more than one bowl. So anyway, thungse means this begging bowl that monks carry. My teacher refused to call it a begging bowl. He objected to that. He called it a wisdom bowl. Okay. Thungse, duti kama. Duti means it's filled with duti, which Sanskrit is amrita. Amrita. How they got that, I have no idea. Say amrita. Yeah. Mert is the root for mortuary, mortal, murder. It means death. Okay. Amrita means deathlessness. Okay. The privative A in Greek. Atheistic, agnostic, apathetic. Okay. The negative A. Okay, so amrta means, the Greek came from Sanskrit, negative A. Amrta means no death, okay? Duti kama namba. And he's in the bowl, in the wisdom bowl is amrta, okay? And all of that has significance. He's teaching, he's also in deep meditation, he must be an enlightened being, and he's holding, with his meditation hand, he's holding a bowl of deathlessness, which he can offer to you. He or she can provide to you deathlessness if you learn properly, right? All right, then. You can have deathless nectar. They are selling it out there. Cookies and brownies and other illegal things. All right, so we'll take a break till maybe 8:25, okay? 15-minute pee-pee break and Don't be shy to pay $20 for a cookie. You're helping three orphans. Okay? All right. Okay. See you then. Okay, we'll start again. So his chakye, his right hand is in the teaching gesture. His left hand is in the meditation gesture. And in the left hand is a hlungse filled with a murta. Namba means, is the honorific for holding, like zimba. Namba is the high honorific for holding. Tep dzubki, can you show that image again? Excuse me? Anyway. Anyway, tep dzubki means this hand is also the first finger and the thumb, tep dzub, are holding utpala. Utpala is a kind of lotus, like a blue lotus, okay? Utpala. And yuwa means the stem of a blue lotus. Dzimba means holding. Dhamma means the petals. Nyen is the honorific for nose, okay? Mikme, nawame, name. Normally it's nawa, but the high honorific for nose is nyen. You don't say Jetsun Kapa's nawa. You say Jetsun Kapa's nyen, okay? So if you really get into Tibetan, there's two. Colloquial is very difficult, but the high colloquial is even more difficult. Okay. And then there's an epistolary colloquial for letter writing, which no Tibetan knows anymore. Okay, nian. Kitedu. So tedu means on the level of his nose is the flower. So it's supposed to be... That's not a very great... The artist was not very skilled at all. Okay. Namanyan. We're not allowed to say it's a lousy image of Jetsun Kapa. We're supposed to say the artist was not so skilled. I agree. Okay. Anyway, kachewe tedu kachewe yekitengdu. Yekitengdu means on top of the on the right side is a shirabki relti. We'll have to find a better one. You had one. You had a better one. Yeah, early on. Anyway, it's supposed to be a sword. And the sword, semo means the tip of the sword. Chungse barwa means there's a little bit of flame coming out of the tip of the sword. Okay? Chungse barwa dang. Yungi tengdu, on the left, higher up on the left, is getong in lekpam. Getong means the presentation of the perfection of wisdom in 8,000. It's not quite verses because it's not in poetry, but you can say lines, but it's in Sanskrit lines, so the Tibetan doesn't exactly follow it, but you can say 8,000 lines, okay? Getongba. Lekpam means a book of scripture in the traditional format. Rangda Drogpa. Rangda Drogpa means it is singing itself. The book is singing itself. Okay? Got it? Okay. Rangda Drogpa. Miksel Rangkangla Tesam Gonsung Ki Jupe Sunam De Lekpam To Mu. Miksel is a very important word in Tibetan. Huh? No, miksel means an exception. So like if everyone is supposed to clean pots today in the monastery kitchen, you will normally go to the head cook and request a miksel. You're talking pots that you can climb into and three people can climb into and wash for 2 hours. Okay? Like, you know, to feed 3,000 monks tea or something. So miksel is a very important word in the monastery. Miksel means, I would like to be excused. It means an exception, okay? Rinpoche had a famous exception. He was accepted from everything. He proved himself to be so unusual that he got like a blanket mix-up. And they said, okay, just go for it. You know, you're weird, you know. Just go for it. So anyway, that's a mix-up. So Ran Kangla, you personally, Tsam Gongsum Ki, whatever book you happen to be studying at the time, by either learning it or contemplating it or meditating upon it, you can m at the end. M means you can imagine that rather than the 8,000 lines. So if you're studying the diamond cutter, you can imagine that Jetsun Khapa has the diamond cutter next to him. Or if you're studying the gift of liberation thrust into your hands, poorly translated as liberation in the palm of your hands, you can imagine that book is the one that he's holding, or the one next to him. Okay, there's the book up on the right? And there's the sword up on our left. Those of you who are going to be translators, be careful when they say left or right. They mean from the image's own point of view. So the sword is on the
right.
Okay? Be careful. When you translate, you can get really confused. Okay? But sometimes they reverse it. Okay. All right. Korkum gi dang denbe chuge namsum sulwa. Korkum is saffron. It's the Tibetan word for saffron. Dang here means the shade or hue of color. In colloquial, dang means the complexion, the ruddiness of the complexion. And in Tibetan medicine, it's very important. You know, the relative health of a person is judged greatly from the dang, the relative amount of glow of their face, okay? So anyway, dang dang denbe chuge, he wears the three traditional robes of a Buddhist monk, okay? These are he's gonna mention it here. Kun namsum sowa. Deyang korkum la tsu serpo dam marser dam marposum de yupe dangchen ki rimshin namjar lama tanga. So he says here there are three grades of saffron. All right? One is tsu serpo. Tsu here means color. It's serpo means more golden. Golden in Tibet means this color, okay? Not the metallic gold color. We have, in English, we say gold for sort of a bronze color, right? Paint, gold paint is sort of a bronze color. But in Tibet, when you say gold, it means this color. So be careful when you're translating that. So serpo means a golden color. Marser means a ruddy, reddish gold color, okay? In the jewelry business, it's 24 karat gold, right? Or 18 karat, or 12 karat, or... Anyway, 18 is a lot, 12 is pretty normal nowadays. But that means out of 24, so 18 karat is 3/4 gold. Then you can add other alloys to make it more reddish. So you add like copper, and it becomes more reddish. So that's, you got to think of reddish gold. So one grade of saffron is pure gold, one is a reddish gold, and one is marpo. One is just outright red, okay? Why are we talking about that? That relates to the three robes that he's wearing, okay? The laga, which means the, sorry, namjar is the outer robe that monks wear. Okay? Laga is the next robe down. And then tanga is the skirt. So we have two formal robes that we're supposed to wear. The outer one with patches on it is called, here it's called namjar. Namjar means patched together. And then larga means the under robe that is granted to novice monks. And then the tanga means the skirt. So the skirt is red in color, like red saffron. The under outer robe, cloak, is, by the way, I'm not talking about this thing. This is, doesn't even count. This is called a sen, and it's more or less a portable sleeping bag in ancient times. Very useful. You know, if you get stuck in a train station in India, you just pull out your sen and you cover yourself and you go to bed. And that's what its function was. Okay. So anyway, those are the three robes that he has on. Pencha means... That's pretty good. Can you go back to Jason Kapa? The pencha, this is called a pandit's hat. Sha means hat. The V wasar is silent. Those of you who care, it's not jiva or something like that. Okay, it's just sha, and that's a orthographical mark, meaning it's just different spelling. It changes the spelling. It changes the meaning. Okay. So this sha means a hat. So that particular hat is supposed to be a sign of a great saint or a wise person. Okay, sha serki dokchen semo no. The point should be sharp. The point of the hat should be sharp, and that represents the intellectual powers of the person wearing it are sharp. Okay. And shing toa. Toa means it's a very high. La ula sulwa means this sulwa. You know sulwan dep means what? Sulwan dep means to make a supplication. And but as a high honorific verb, sulwa means to wear. Okay, you should know that, or else you'll get confused. Okay, sulwa. It all, can also mean to eat or drink. It's a high word. Okay, silwa. There are lots of meanings to all these things that he's wearing: the robes, the hat, the book, the bowl, the amrita, the sword. Many, many important points of symbolism going on here. Kyang. Good. Tala means in the present situation, meaning dala means. In our talk today, dalam, right now, here and now, dalam, shuma kom. The kom is a very difficult word that means to have time to do something. Okay? To have time to do something. What's the honorific of that? Kom gemindu means I don't have time to do it today. Kom gemindu. Kom gemindu. You go to your lama and you say, you know, kom gedue. You have time to help me with something? They said, no, kong gemindu. Okay, I don't have time. You don't say, na la du me. That would be like saying, I don't have a clock. Or you see what I mean? They don't say, I don't have time. They say, there's a verb that means I don't have time. so foreigners are always coming up and saying, I don't have a clock. So anyway, kong me, na la kong me. What's the high honorific in scripture for that word, kong? It's chok. Chok, say chok. Mi chok me. What's that? Yeah, it's a high state of meditation which you have to reach. It's the platform from which you can see emptiness directly. And its name is Mi chok me. And when they explain it, they say Mi kom me. Mi chok me means Mi kom me. Without no time. Meaning there's lots of time. Okay. All right. Michokme. If you want to know all the symbolism, he says, I don't have time to talk about it today. You can go read the cheese. This means the written records of teachings on Gahla, an abbreviation for Ganden Lhagyama. Okay. Ganden Lhagyama. The most common pair of our lineage, okay? The thousand angels of the heaven of bliss, and Lama Chipa. You can go read the commentaries on those. If you want to know what the hat means and why it's gold and, you know, why the sword is there and what the flower means, you can go read commentaries on those practices. You can read it there. Okay? Chuwatarian. We'll do a little bit more, okay? 10 more minutes, okay? We were supposed to stop like 15 minutes ago. But you ate too many cookies. They took our Tupe Wangbo. You can't see it here, but in Jetsun Kapa's heart, inside the chest, is Lord Buddha, okay? Tupe Wangbo. And inside of that Buddha's heart is Gyawa Dorje Chang, the Vajradhara, the silken angel, silken jewel-covered angel, who teaches the secret teachings. So inside of Jetsun Kapa's heart, you've got the person who teaches the open teachings. And inside their heart is the, like, what do you call those Russian eggs? Fabergé egg? Eggs within eggs. Yeah, so inside the Lama, the Buddha who teaches the open teachings, is the Lama who teaches the tantric teachings. And they took our, and inside the tantric Lama's heart is Tingenzin Semba, which means the being of concentration, which is a simple hung letter. It's a syllable. It's a Sanskrit syllable, hung, which is mumbo, blue colored. Celled up means that's how you should visualize it. Okay, that's called Semba Tsumtsek, and we covered it last year or something, recently. And it was a long story. Three lamas within each other's hearts. Okay. Deda kyang rangre nyoche tar chik nandu chik chukpa tabu mayim bar nama chi tar genongi nama chen di tar nang yan nang tar nang gyawa shaki tupa yin shi tumbe chen tuka tupa. Yikes. Okay. Deda kyang rangre nyoche tar chik nandu chik chukpa tabu mayim bar. He says you shouldn't think of it. I have a set of mixing bowls at home, ceramic mixing bowls. There's like 5 white mixing bowls, and they fit inside each other. And I broke one, and it was a real hassle. But anyway, he says, don't think of it like that. That's wrong. Okay, so the Russian egg thing is wrong. Okay, why? Lama chitar gelongi namba chen ditar nangyang. The point of doing it this way is not just to fit lamas inside of lamas. The point is that our own teacher, on the outside, we may appear as a traditional Buddhist monk. Gelonggi Namba Chen, Nangyang, they might appear that way, but inside, Nangtar, they look like a normal teacher on the outside, but inside, Nangtar, Gyawa Shakya Tupa Yin, they are the Buddha himself. Tumbechir, in order to indicate that, Tukar Tuborn Ku, that's why we put a Buddha inside the heart of Jetsun Kapa, to indicate that your own teacher is a Buddha on the inside. Sangwatana, Se Chi Nang Sangwasum. This is a very common distinction made in scripture, and he has hidden it here. If you go back through the paragraph, you'll see the word chi. It says lama chi tar. Then it says nang tar. And then it says sangwa tar. So if you look through the sentence we just did, there's a chi tar. Then there's a pi tar, right? Then there's a nang tar. And then there's a sangwa tar. This is a common distinction made in scripture. The outer form, the inner form, and the secret form. Okay, who they are on the outside, who they are on the inside, and who they are in secret are 3 levels of a person's personality. Okay, on the outside, they're appearing as your teacher. On the inside, they are Lord Buddha. But in secret, they are Gyawa Dorje Chang, the Buddha in his tantric form, Ni. Ni, this Ni means none other than, okay, only, okay, like Dongba Ni. None of the yin she tumbe chi. In order to indicate this fact, we put Vajradhara way inside. Okay, that okay. Lama Semba, We'll try to do one more paragraph, okay? I'll torture you. Hehe. Lama Semba Sumsek Shepa Disum Yindro Sam She Kayan Dambo Ni Damsik Semba Dang Gawa Doja Chang Yeshi Semba Dang Tuke Huyu Nothing in the Semba Chaga Lama Semba Sumsek Shepa Disum Yindro Sam She Kayan Lama Semba Sumsek means my Lama in three beings, right? On the outside, a human. On the inside, a Buddha. In secret, an angel. Okay? Sumsek Shepa, Disum Yindro Samshe. You know, Sheka Yang, it would seem to be that expression. There's an expression in Tibetan called Semba Sumsek. Semba Sumsek means the three beings stacked one in the other. Okay? The three beings stacked one inside the other. It would seem to be that they relate to these three. But then he says, but, Dhammo Nyi Dhamsik Sambadang. The first two are what we call Dhamsik Samba. Dhamsik Samba means the outer form that you visualize a deity or an angel in. Okay, they're called Dhamsik Samba, pledge being. In Tantra, it's called pledge being. Okay, and then Gyawa Dorje Chang Yeshe Semba. Yeshe Semba means the inner essence of a pledge being. So in Tantra, it's very common during visualizations, you visualize everybody, and then another set of them comes and sinks in. Ja Hum Ba Ho. Damtik Padang Nisum Me Par Gyur. Right? In our text, in our own tantric practice. You visualize that the spirit forms of these lamas sink into the lamas' bodily forms. Okay? Which are called pledge beings and wisdom beings. Tamsing, Doje Sang Yeshe Semba Dang. Tuke Hung Yen La Dingin Sin Semba Chaga. That's the real three Sembas talking about here. It's not those three people. The first two are Damsik Semba, pledge beings. The third one is a wisdom being. And the final one is a Dingin Sin Semba, a concentration being. Okay? That's what the common Tibetan expression three beings piled together refers to. Okay. Tingin Jin Semba Chaga. Semba Sumse Gomba Dila Naki Sabke Kepa Chen Yukyang. This is nice, okay? Semba Sumse Gomba, meditating on these three beings like a Russian balls, right? Ngak, it relates to Ngak. Tantra, secret teachings. Sub ne kyapa chen means very important, crucial points are there. Sub means profound, ne means crucial. Kyapa chen ye kyang, kyang. But, dear means here in a public teaching, shu mi pop. Shu means to describe it to you. Pop is an interesting word here. Pop means to have the courage to do something. Okay? So it's these, I don't have the guts to say it in public, okay? Like I don't have the foolhardy courage to speak about these things in a public teaching, okay? So it's a very interesting word that he's chosen. I'm not so foolhardily brave as to tell you the real meaning of this thing, okay? In a public teaching, okay? Shumi pop. So pop. By the way, if you're reading a Tibetan newspaper and you come across pop, it's probably the one in the vetken. In the wetken. Like, I remember reading a newspaper one day. Why was I reading a newspaper? Because Rinpoche liked the other student more. And they would talk Tibetan all day. And he would refuse to talk Tibetan to me. And he made me speak English to him so he could learn English. So I boycotted all the conversations and I bought the Tibetan newspapers and I read them while they were talking. And at like at breakfast and stuff. Then I got to this one thing, I was like, Rinpoche, I gotta ask you a question. He says, don't ask me a question. I'm like, what the Pope in the wetken mean? And he said, it's the Pope in the Vatican. I'm like, okay. Okay. Daitabu Lama Shab Dorje Kyo Tungi Shupe Pung So Deshe Nga So Sugomba Di Sangwa Dupe Lu Gil Tsa Gyu Du Do Tsam Sungba You visualize this teacher, this lama, their feet, their legs are in Dorje Kyudrum. Say Dorje. Then I promise I'll stop by 9, okay? Dorje means what? Diamond, what does Kyudrum?
Lotus posture.
Okay. Yeah, Kyudrum means a crossing of the legs. So there's a half lotus. But in Tibetan and in Buddhism, we don't call it lotus. We call it Vajra posture. Okay. So Dorje Kyudrum means... and then lotus posture is a much different thing. And it relates to how the... It relates to union of it's how the lady wraps her legs. Okay? Like that. Kyutung Shi Shupe Pungsok. The parts of your lama, okay? Of your... Whoever's your heart lama. I'm your scripture lama. Whoever's your heart lama are Deshek Nga. Deshek Nga means the five great Buddhas of the universe, okay? So there are traditionally five parts to a person, right? The five heaps, which are? Suk. Your physical form, Sorwa. Your capacity of sense feeling. Duche. Your capacity to discriminate between things. Duche. Let's skip Duche. Namche. Your awareness. And then all the other stuff about you is the fourth one. The fourth one is called all the other stuff. For example, what? Michael. Michael belongs to the fourth one. Michael is not physical or mental. Michael is an idea, right? Michael is a concept. It's in the mind, but it's not mental. It's not made of the mind. Okay? It's a concept within the mind. So all that kind of stuff is thrown into number four. Your personality. Who you are. Your persona. Okay. Anyway, the point is that your lama's little toe, right? Baby toe? Is a Buddha. And their third toe is a Buddha. And their second toe is a different Buddha. And their big toe is a different Buddha. And there's beautiful, like, long explanations, you know. His left eyebrow is this Buddha. His right eyebrow is this Buddha, you know. And it's very beautiful. It goes through all the parts of the body. And then it ends up your lama, even your lama's physical form is all these Buddhas collaborating. Okay. I'll be the left eyebrow. Okay. I'll be the right eyebrow. Okay. All right, like that. Okay. So Shegyut, where does that come from in this world? It comes from a teaching called Sangvadupa, Guhya Samaja, which is one of the many tantric classes of the secret teachings. There are, Ningbo cataloged them recently on a flight to Singapore, 12 hours. It took a couple flights, right? But there were a couple hundred tantras taught in Tibet that reached Tibet from India. Many got lost when the Mughals attacked India and were forever lost. But the ones that came to Tibet are, what did you say, like 150 or something? Something like that. He cataloged them. It was a lot of fun for the computer project, for the refugee project. Anyway, one of them is called Guhya Samaja. Inside of that, they have a thing called Lukyal. What's Lukyal? It's called a body mandala, and this is where you envision a whole enlightened world within your chest. Okay, like if somebody scraped the skin, suddenly, then they looked inside, there'd be all these guys in there, all these angels, like, flying around and talking to each other and having dinner and, you know, like if you could scrape this, if you got scraped with a fingernail, then you could peek inside the person's body and there's no blood, there's no flesh, it's just blue light and there's all these angels running around inside their body, okay? That's called Lukyal. Tsargyu to Dotsam Sungha means in the root tantra, there is a brief presentation, just a brief presentation. This do means brief, okay? It doesn't mean sutra, okay? Sheyu means and explanatory tantra. So the Buddha taught tantra, and then he gave teachings to explain the tantra that he taught. So both of them are considered the Kangyur. They're in the word of the Buddha, even though they're a commentary. The second one is a commentary, but it's Lord Buddha commenting on Lord Buddha. Okay, so even though it's a commentary, we put it in the Kangyur because it was spoken by an enlightened being, okay, an overtly enlightened being. Okay, Shegyur Dorje Tenwa. Dorje Tenwa means a mala made of diamonds, okay, which is another tantra. It's another tantric system. And that derives from a commentary on the Guhya Samaja Tantra called Dorje Tenwa. Ratnavali. Vajravali. Okay. Tenwa. Chawe Mengak Yin means these are all private advices that are commentaries on that tantra and its explanatory tantra. Yin. Okay. I went and looked it up, the root tantra, and I read it just for fun, because I was curious, you know, like how did the five Buddhas? I did it at my mom's house, actually. You didn't know, that's what I was doing over in the corner there. I was looking it up because I was really interested, and then I read the tantra and it was very beautiful. It's really, really beautiful. So it's kind of interesting. Let me see. That's a long story. It's a beautiful scene. It's like this. Before the creation of the universe, there's a Buddha sitting there, and then four Buddhas form around that Buddha, and then that Buddha splits himself and goes into the other four. So, and then that becomes the five Buddha families. It's like the creation of the five Buddha families. Like before the universe started. And it's very beautiful to imagine it like these beings sitting in a place where there's no universe yet, and five enlightened beings sitting, four around one, and then this one enters the others, you know. And then that's the creation of the five Buddha families. And it's a beautiful, it's the opening sections of the Guhya Samaja root tantra. And that's where this teaching all comes from. Okay. And I'll teach you more about that, okay? He's going to explain how the five Buddhas are present in your lama, in parts of your lama, okay? So it gets a little complicated, but it's a kind of, I think it's fun, you know? So like, if your teacher, male or female, gets a haircut, for example, then I like to go pick up some of the hair and think, you know, Vairochana's there, that's Vairochana, you know, or like that, you know, and then it becomes very, their fingernails after they clip them off or something, like it's like, oh wow, you know, there's a little piece of a primordial enlightened being from a zillion years ago, you know, and you're supposed to think like that. It's a very healthy thing to think about that, okay? So we'll get into it. When? Friday night. Tomorrow we have a day off. I think it's wise to take a day off in these 10-day teachings. I think it's enjoyable for all of us and it's important for all of us. But I think if you get really exhausted, it's not good. I think it's important to rest also, to know when to rest. And, you know, we all want to learn more. And we want to hear these beautiful things, but it's important to take a day off and go. I encourage you to get outside. I think part of why the Glendale thing was so beautiful is that we were outside under the stars. And I think we should do more of that. It'd be pleasant to do more teachings there, I think. And So try to get outside, try to be in nature. Don't sit in a room somewhere with a computer all day. You know, like get out and breathe the air and see. There's lots of beautiful places in Phoenix or outside of Phoenix. So get a good rest. Okay, don't be too busy. Like just kind of relax. It's very difficult for us to relax, right? You feel like you don't deserve to relax, but if you relax, then everything is better after that. You know, it's actually spiritual practice to relax properly. And I think a lot of spiritual people have trouble relaxing properly. So try to improve on that tomorrow. Okay? All right, then. Bonnie? You ready?
Pukhi joshi mento tam Liram lingshi ninde gyempadi Sangye shindu nikte uvagi Roku namda shingma jipasho Hiram guru radna mandala kamdi atayani Dike woga sanam yeshe sotsoshi Sanam yeshe lechuwe Namba kuni tapa shom.
Then one last thing. So my mother died, I don't know, when I was like 20. And my stepmother took over after that. And so I was very lucky because I had two extraordinary mothers in my life. And so she helped me my whole life, supported me my whole life. And you should, if you get a chance, you should thank her. Because I couldn't do what I'm doing without her. And we are best friends for my whole life. And the day I got ordained, she flew to India on her own. We got separated in Rome. Something happened. Her flight got canceled and I had to go with Rinpoche. And we were supposed to hook up in Rome. And then... I think it was 1983, and she flew. So she just said, you know, what the heck, I'm going anyway. And she got a flight somehow to India, and we didn't know she had caught another flight. We thought she went home. So then she, in the middle of the night, she's like driving out to Kushinagar in a broken old car, you know, and she slept on the table in a tea shop in Kushinagar, and then the next day found the walked through the fields, found the monastery, and just made it in time for the ordination. And then many, many years later came again for the Geshe ceremony. And it's because of her that I'm able to teach and be here. So you should take care. Okay, have a nice day, y'all.